It's showtime. Welcome back to the Mix Files. We have a face burner for you this evening. You're going to go all Kurt Busch on us because pretty soon your ears are going to be pinned back, my friend. Gary Ramsey is our guest this week on the Mix Files, and he's got some smoking hot cooking music that is absolutely delicious. You're listening to a little bit of it right now, and you'll get to hear the remainder of the tune at the end of the program. Carolina Queens is this one. It was a Mixposure.com Song of the Week. You're listening to the Mix Files. You listen to the Mix Files on Mixstream Radio. Mixstream Radio comes to you from Mixposure.com. Mixposure.com is where all this independent music is. Be part of it. Come on by. Sign up. It's painless. It's free. The Mix Files premieres a new interview with a Mixposure artist each week on Saturday Night Rocks, which occurs conveniently enough on Saturday nights. I'm your host, Cooter. So here we go. Get ready. Buckle your seatbelts, put on your Hans device, make sure your helmet is strapped tight, and be sure there's no holes in your fire suit, because here it comes.
How did you get into music, Gary?
Well, I started playing guitar when I was like 15 years old, man. Mm-hmm. And I lived in this really, really rough neighborhood, man. You were either hanging out at the bootleggers and staying drunk the whole time, or you were out working on a car.
Yeah.
And being a grease monkey, and I just didn't really care about working on any cars, and I didn't drink at that time. And I started noticing that the guitar players had all the girls.
Uh-huh.
So I said, I like girls.
Yeah.
And as I started playing guitar, I mean, I drove my parents crazy. My dad got me one of those little Sears acoustic guitars back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I started learning, I learned the first three chords, the G, the C, and the D. And I drove them crazy because I'd play them over and over and over.
Yeah.
I would come home from school, man. I'd go straight to my room and sit there after I'd do my homework. I would just start practicing my guitar.
Yeah.
And I would even go to the bathroom. If I had to go to the bathroom, I'd be sitting on the John, man, with my guitar on my lap practicing, you know? And I would play. I've heard people say this thing about playing till their fingers bled. I actually did play till my fingers would bleed.
Yeah.
And then I went in 77. I went, the first concert I ever saw was Led Zeppelin.
Oh, man.
And I went to see the Led Zeppelin, and I went home and I bought every album that I could get by Zeppelin. And I started learning the songs. And to this day, I can still pretty much play most of the Zeppelin tunes.
Yeah.
Note for note. And then I got ruined and found Black Sabbath and started getting heavier and heavier. And then Pantera came along, and oh, man, that's a whole other story in itself there, man.
You was in hog heaven then, huh?
Oh, God, Dimebag was the baddest ass guitar player I'd ever heard.
Yeah.
And, right now, Zakk Wylde and Black Label Society, I'm a big fan of them. And
right.
As a matter of fact, a friend of mine here in North Carolina, in Kannapolis, named Joe Davis from the Joe Davis Band.
I've heard that name somewhere.
Yeah, he's great, man. I mean, he is an awesome instrument. He's an awesome songwriter and musician, man. Mm-hmm. He had just recently lost his drummer because his drummer was, there were issues.
Yeah.
And while my band 13 is on a little break, we're taking a couple months off from the road and stuff and jamming. And I said, well, man, you can borrow my drummer if you want. So we rode up there Sunday and hung out and let my drummer sit in with him on some stuff. And he was like all happy. He said, man, I can't believe you're doing this for me. I said, man, that's what it's all about, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's really great too, man. So, I know a lot of really good musicians, man. We opened up for a bunch of great bands, man. I mean, we've been around a while.
Cool.
So, all I've ever really done is music. That's all I've ever really wanted to do. I've tried the 9-to-5 thing, man.
Yeah.
And I got to be honest, I'm just too damn lazy for that 9-to-5.
That's cool, too. How about Down on Me?
Down on Me? Actually, man, that is truly my life story.
Oh, really?
Oh, God, man. Ain't got no money, got bills to pay. That is so mm-hmm. true. And mm-hmm. holes in my pockets to match the ones in my shoes. I've lived that life, man. Mm-hmm.
I have
and like I said, I was telling you earlier about hitchhiking across the states.
Yes.
I got caught in a rainstorm, man, in the desert, and there was nothing to get under to cover me up or anything. It rained, I don't know, probably 6 straight hours down on me, man, just as hard as it could rain.
Yep.
And I mean, I'm not ashamed to say it. I just started crying after about the 3rd hour, man, because it was beating me to death.
Yeah.
And so my tears were falling just like the rain was. And then it was just, and then, you know, like winding up sitting on a fence trying to make a dollar out of 55 cents. That's just some of the things I've been through.
That is such a cool line, by the way. That is such a cool line.
I've done it, man. Sat on the bed counting out pennies just to go get some ketchup.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. And it's just been, I've lived that kind of life. I mean, I was homeless for a while, man. I slept under many bridges, dude. I mean, it wasn't because I had to be. It was by choice because I was so fed up with some of the places I had been living, and I had to get away, and I had to rediscover who I was.
Yeah.
So the best way to do that is to get away and get by yourself.
Yeah.
And people would say, man, you can crash in my house if you want, but I didn't want to burden anybody or anything like that. And, you know, when I was younger, I was tougher, a lot tougher than I am now, but I could take it, you know. I've actually woke up a couple times with icicles hanging off my mustache, dude, you know. And I would go into stores and stuff, and I would actually go to truck stops and wash dishes for them just to make a meal.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just, that's actually basically tells how I lived.
Well, I've listened to that one a number of times, but I'm going to listen to it again just as soon as we finish talking, and I'm going to listen to it a little bit different this time.
Yeah, it's a little more autobiographical than anything. Because a lot of the lines, I mean, it's just like, you know, I learned that life ain't no party if you got no money to burn.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I've been around a bunch of people that will just crash party, be broke, and we'll just go hang out with people just to drink up their beer and smoke up their weed and eat up their food, hang out with them, just use them, which I've never done. You know, I've never understood that stuff. And,
yeah.
And I've lived and learned. You know, that's one thing about life. You got to, if you don't learn, man, then you failed.
Yep.
If you don't make, you got to make mistakes. You have to make mistakes. You actually have to. You know, like the journey of 1,000 steps starts with the very first step, man.
Yeah. And if you're not making mistakes, you're just not doing anything. The only people that don't make mistakes are the people that don't ever do anything.
Yeah, you know, it's like a lot of people, they'll sit back and go, why me, when life throws rocks and lemons at them. I mean, me, and I don't say why me, I say try me.
Yeah.
You know, just go ahead, let's see if I could take it. If I can, I'll admit it. You know, I'm the first one to admit when I'm defeated.
Yeah.
I'll be the first one to admit when I'm wrong. You know, a lot of my friends love that because I'm so brutally honest, man. I would rather hurt somebody's feelings than let them believe a lie.
We'll be right back.
I suppose if I got committed to it and I was willing to sing often enough to get my throat and my vocal cords and my voice in some kind of condition where, you know, where it could tolerate, you know, a night of it, that maybe, you know, maybe I could, but that's not where my heart is, you know. My heart's in writing songs.
You write some good songs, man. Yeah. The ones I've heard on your page are really, really good.
Yeah, that's...
I love the lyrics.
Cool, thank you. Coming from you, man, that's a giant compliment, and I appreciate it.
Well, see, being a songwriter myself, when I listen to somebody else's song, I automatically zone in on the lyrics and the melody.
Yeah.
And I love the lyrics on your tunes, man. I mean, they're all good.
Cool. I appreciate that, Gary. How about Branded?
Branded?
There a story? Yeah.
I actually wrote that, man. My drummer, Jeff, his girlfriend, he was so in love with this chick, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, that happens.
And she just, out of the blue, dumped him, man, and he was just devastated.
That happens, too.
But he was so in love with this chick, man, and then she just, like, devastated him. And there for about a month or two, man, I mean, his heart wasn't in it, man. And I just thought about it, and I wrote Branded basically dedicated to him and the way he was feeling. And he listened to it. He said, man, that's me all the way. I said, yeah, I know.
I'm branded, the wound that never heals.
I can tell you it was hard.
Yeah.
It was a lot of hungry and a lot of big mean dogs chasing you sometimes, and cops picking you up on one side of the town you walked into and taking you to the other side of town and telling you to keep walking and
yeah,
stuff like that. I felt like Rambo in a couple of places.
a lot of self-realization too, though, I imagine. A lot of self-realization too, I imagine, though.
Yes, sir. I mean, you know, like, when you lay out in the desert and there's no city lights around or anything, you actually get to look up at the sky and see.
And the sky looks different, doesn't it, when you're
yes,
away from
it,
city lights?
Yes, it does. The moon looked
that.
Bigger. I mean, it was brighter. I mean, I thought it would be really, really dark.
Yeah.
But at nighttime, it was just as bright, man. You could see really well, and it was just, you could see the spinning of the stars above your head, man, and you got to take in the vastness of what we actually live in.
Yeah.
And it kind of gives you a different perspective on what, on how small our lives really is.
Yeah.
And what we contribute to it is how we handle it. You know, just, I think it's better just to be as nice to people as you can be, man, and try to always be the best person you can be, and always just always be honest about everything, man. I mean, you know, because and just always be ready to lend that helping hand, and no matter what. I mean, I would give somebody my shirt off my back. Just because, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Sure do. Yeah.
And you know, you were talking about playing the ride. You were gonna play the ride, right?
Yeah. That's not one that you suggested, but I love it. So, you know, and I'm the one doing the show, so I do get to pick a tune or two that goes in there.
I got you, man. you know how that song came about. You know, a lot of friends ride bikes. We all ride bikes and stuff, and people would say, where are you going, man? Why do you take off and just stay gone all day? Where do you go? I'm like, nowhere.
Doesn't matter.
It's like that line said, forget the journey, it's all about the ride.
Yeah.
Disgrace was actually, we had a, there was a lot of things about runaway teens, and we wanted to say something about that, you know, about, we wanted to do a little storyline concerning runaway teens. That's basically what that song is about. Because, you know, there was a big epidemic around here there for a while, and as you know, man, in America, there are a lot of homeless kids or basically runaway teens.
Yes.
So we wanted to, you know, kind of point out the kind of things that they went through and that they're going through. As a matter of fact, like the one line that where it says he loves the needle's bite, and you know, and all that, and where she loves the razor blades, she dreams about the scar but never cuts it in, and all that stuff. And these kids just, I actually while I was in L.A. living, I went to this place. A friend of mine took me, he said, "You want to see the cardboard city?" I said, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
So we go down to the what they call the L.A. River, which to me
ain't, man, really. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's more like a little trickle.
Yeah, and but they had all these cardboard houses, man. I mean, these people had a community set up that stretched as far as I could see, man, and it just broke my heart, dude.
Yeah.
Because I saw so many kids and stuff. I was just like, wow, man, that's. I said, then they didn't have money, but they had a barter system, kind of like back in the medieval days.
Yeah.
They would trade for this, trade for that, and they were just doing the best they could do to survive. And I thought, this is just terrible.
Yeah, yeah. So
Our Disgrace is basically about runaway kids and the trials and tribulations they do, because, you know, it goes, she hates this life. It's her disgrace.
Yeah.
And at the very last time, hate this life. It's our disgrace.
Yeah.
Because we as an American people pretty much helped create that problem.
Well, as a worldwide civilization, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
It's everywhere, man. And
there's too many people that want to preach about helping, but not enough actually doing it.
Well, you know, the people that preach the loudest about it are usually the ones that are doing the least.
True. She's not the type of girl that does what mama says, just tries to make the day and live the life she lives. Love's just a shallow grave in a shallow world. Friend Pekka Loikkanen, and when I met Pekka it was the same way. You know, he said, "Hey man, do some lyrics and vocal tracks to my songs." I said, "Okay." So, and what they do, you know, they'd send me a track, and I would actually sit down and write the lyrics and put the vocal tracks on. And if it needed a bass track, I would throw the bass track on, and we would back and forth through the email, man, just a track at a time.
Uh-huh.
And the stuff with me and Pekka, man, it went way out beyond what we thought it would go.
Yeah.
And I still do it. I've got a friend named Dawn Alberts that's in Massachusetts, man. It's just like a female singer. It's just like, sounds just like Janis Joplin, man. But man, she's actually did a few of my songs. And I actually write country songs as well, man. I did a country song called Standing Up Walls, and a veteran of the Grand Ole Opry, Bill Sterling, recorded that one for me. And
cool.
And it went to number one in England there for a while on a couple of music sites in England, and he was like really, really pleased with it, and a lot of people liked it, and then when they heard who wrote it and who and saw me, they were like, "That's the guy that wrote Standing Up Walls."
I know there's something on your mind. I can see it in your face, where you and I once talked is just another empty place. Oh, I can feel it in the night every time you turn away. I can hear it in the words that we never say. You've been standing up walls so high between us, standing up walls down. I can't get through them, all these walls you've been building, standing up walls, you're standing up walls. Time I know you love me. You and I had it together, but somehow that all changed. Could it be you found another? If you knew just how I feel when I think about. Know the love I have for you, and help me stop these feelings. You've been standing up walls so high between us, standing up can't get through them. All these walls you've been building, standing up tall, you're standing up tall.
Me and a friend named Wicasta Loveless would sit in his room and just write music and record it on a four track. That's when we first started experimenting with recording.
Uh-huh.
And we would just, you know, just record and record and play and play. And I still use the licks that I started then on some songs. And then I joined a band called Vicious because they needed a bass player. The bass player wanted to be a front man.
Mm-hmm.
So they never could find a bass player. And I was a guitar player, man.
Yeah.
I said, well, I've never really tried bass, but I'll give it a shot. So I go in, and next thing I know, I'm the bass player for this band.
Yeah.
And then that band, you know, went south. So me and the guitar player from that band started a band called Machine. And Machine was together for 15 years, man. We traveled up and down the East Coast playing like crazy. Machine actually made it onto MTV when MTV played music.
Outstanding.
And they had a little thing they called it a basement tapes at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we had this song called War Zone.
I remember that show, the basement tapes.
We had a song called War Zone. We paid and had a professional production video made for it and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we turned it in, and it made it out of all the thousands of people that entered that contest, man. We were in the top 20.
Cool.
Which was way cool for me. You know,
absolutely. That's a pretty big deal right there.
And they actually played us on their show, and we got into that rotation for every week that they were showing the bands in that contest.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, a local radio station here picked it up, and it was 95 Rock at the time, and they picked it up and they were playing it, and they were playing actually a couple of songs off of that CD that we made.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually good. We got a lot of really great gigs from those, just from those connections.
Yeah.
And so, you know, then I got hooked up with some people out of Chicago that were actually doing a documentary on unsigned artists and songwriters, and I actually got to be a part of that, too.
Cool.
So, one of my friends out in California plays for Blind on Bourbon, Sean Salerno.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Salerno, he called me one day. He said, man, he said, you are one of the most known unknown people I've ever met. I thought that was funny.
I think that was a compliment.
I said, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
He said he can mention my name anywhere in any circle out there, and he said people know who I am. I said, well, that's cool, but, the same thing over in England, and I've got some friends in France. And they all say the same thing. They say, they mention my name, people say, oh, man, he jams.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, it doesn't give me the big head or anything. It puts me in awe, man. That you got to love modern technology.
It makes you feel good to hear it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It really does. It makes it well worth it. Because, you know, without the fans out there, man, I mean, without the fans being who they are, I couldn't be who I am.
Yeah.
Because it's up to the fans more than anything of whether your songs get heard or word of mouth or whatever.
Yeah. Widow's Watch. What about that one?
Widow's Watch. Man, I was actually watching a show called Ghost Hunters. I didn't even know that this was what this was about. The legend of the Widow's Watch is, like, in the, you know, those old sea towns, those old houses where the lighthouse keeper would live.
Mm-hmm.
There was that little cupola window, the little doghouse, the balcony at the top of the house at the attic section.
Yes.
That is called the Widow's Watch. And that is what women would stand there and watch for their husbands to come back from sea when they'd go off to battle back in the Revolutionary War and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they would stand to watch for them to come back from sea. And the majority of them, their husbands didn't come back, so they began calling it the Widow's Watch. And I thought that would be a really good idea for a song.
Thank you.
How did you find Mixposure, Gary?
A friend of mine named Paul Underwood, the Native Axeman, had actually told me about it. Uh-huh. He's a friend of mine from Montana, a 6'4" Sioux Indian. And I had met him walking when I was traveling, you know, across the U.S. There were times, man, when I would just take a dart and throw it at the map, and that's where I would go, whether I knew anybody or not. And I ran into Paul and his family, and they put me up for a couple of weeks, and we became really good friends. And I made it back to North Carolina, and he found me on MySpace, of all things.
Well, now that's really cool.
And he actually hooked me up with Mixposure. He said, man, check out this site, because I was on another site called Jamwave. Mm-hmm. And Jamwave is defunct now. They've already closed down. And, I've got stuff all over the internet. You know, there's all kind of music sites that got my stuff on it, like Reverb Nation and ShowcaseYourMusic.com and, a bunch of them, man. Uh-huh. And when he hit me up with Mixposure, you know, he told me to check it out. So I did, and it seemed like as soon as I put my stuff on Mixposure, I started getting some reviews from some really great artists, man. I mean, I was going and listening to their stuff, and I was going, wow, this guy likes my tunes? Whoa.
Yeah.
And I thought, how cool is that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, Mixposure is kind of a special place, I think. There's a lot of places you can put music online, but...
Nobody will say anything about it, or they'll listen to it, or they won't comment or leave you a feedback, you know.
Yeah, or if they do, it's an advertisement.
Oh, yeah, you get a link to something stupid.
Yeah, and here there's just none of that. When somebody
that's why I like it.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really like about it too. I had never done any online collaborations till I found Mixposure. I mean, I had written songs with other people, but I had never done any online collabs till I found Mixposure.
And when I write songs, I try to write songs that I would like as a listener myself, you know?
Yes.
I try to, and when we do shows, people say, man, you're a madman on stage. And I say, I play the same for one person as I do for 1,000. You know, I'm like, I do a show that, I try to put on a show that I would like to see.
Yeah.
Back in the day when Skid Row used to come out and everybody's like running wild on stage, when the shows were big and grand and just blasting in your face, just you walk out going, holy crap.
Yeah.
I like to do shows like that. You know, we do it a lot. We do a band of 13. I've got, you know, like I'm saying right now, well, I've got several projects all at once because I play with so many different bands.
Mm-hmm.
My band of 13, we played bukus of benefits and, you know, stuff like that, which we do stuff to help out kids, and we've played some cancer benefits for places. And the Friends of Witten Center is actually a hospital where patients go to finish out their days, but they're terminal and they're not going to make it.
Right.
So we went and did big shows for them, man. And those turned into big 3-day. What started out as just a couple of bands showing up to play, that became a 3-day event.
Cool.
And the bikers would all come in. I mean, there were bike clubs that would come in and donate money, and people would have tents. It became a big, they had to rent a big field, man. Like, it was almost Woodstockish, but for the way it turned out, because it was 10 bands a night for 3 nights.
Yeah.
And we would get up there and we would usually wind up headlining, and it was always pretty fun, man. I mean, I did it, and everybody said, man, you guys don't get paid for that. I said, yes, we do.
Yeah.
Maybe not money, but spiritually.
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah.
I'm a firm believer in karma.
I am.
That's another song I've got too, Damned If You Do.
Yeah. Tell me about that one.
That one is actually about a friend him and his wife had not been getting along in a long time, and he met this girl, you know, just drove him crazy, and then he was like, if I wind up cheating on my wife, I'm going to regret it, but if I don't, I'm going to be miserable here and all this stuff. And I said, well, you're damned if you do, or you're damned if you don't. Shake me.
Sharing with us how Carolina Queens came to be, that would be appreciated, Gary.
Man, we've been playing a lot of biker bars and parties and stuff, you know, and everybody was like just bummed because the music scene here kind of fizzled out for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, everywhere we play, man, there's bukus of chicks.
Yeah.
And these rock and roll chicks here in the Carolinas, man, you can't beat them. I mean, they're loyal, they're beautiful. And no, and I noticed nobody ever actually written a song dedicated to them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told Pekka, I said, I'm going to write one about these chicks here in and right around here, man. And I just started thinking of the towns that we played in and stuff. And every town that I mentioned in that song is probably within 2 hours of my home.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, and like Burnt Mill, when it comes out that first line from the Burnt Mill Waters, that's a little creek community. They have a bar and a clubhouse out there, and they camp, and people take their kids as a family place.
Yeah.
So we go out there, and we hang out. You know, it's just to, like, just go out and have fun.
Uh-huh.
And we go out there, and everywhere we go, man, I mean, just everybody's so nice to us and all that. So I decided to write one just for the chicks.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are just like, all right, man, you mentioned their town. You know, I'm like, well, you were there.
Yeah.
And just they all freaked out and said, oh, that is so cool. And actually, I had a stripper wanting to use it in one of her sessions while she danced.
Uh-huh.
I said, hell, go for it.
Yeah.
I said, when somebody asks who that song is, you tell them.
It's music. It's meant to be played.
Yeah. And but you know, it actually came out better than I thought it was. Everybody said, man, you kind of sound like Zakk Wylde on it. I said, well, that's good. He's one of my heroes, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of like how that one came about. I just wanted to pay homage to all these beautiful ladies here in the Carolinas, man. That's pretty much the bottom line on that one, because it's just because all the girls are out there, man. We'll be playing, and they're in front of the stage. They're better than a lot of metal bands I used to play in. It was mostly guys in front of the stage.
Yeah.
So I'm happier when they pull their shirts up now than what they used to be. If anything I had to say to anybody out there listening, if you're a musician, a fan, or anything, if you're a fan, support your bands. Support the bands out there that are local. Go to the clubs and watch them play. Do everything you can to make sure that they realize that you appreciate them. If you're a musician, either an older musician or an up-and-coming musician, the only thing that can stop you from achieving what you want to do is you yourself. You've got to believe in yourself before anybody else will believe in you. Just get out there and do it. Never, ever think that you can't. Because, you know, if you start out thinking you can't do it, then you probably can't. it automatically dooms you right there from the start. Always get out there in the morning. When you wake up in the morning, just first thing I do, man, is thank you, Lord, for this new day. And make that day matter. You know, nobody, you've got the power within yourself to do whatever you want to do. Don't let anybody say you can't, because that's not their place. If you want to write a song, you don't have to be the greatest guitar player or the greatest singer. Do it anyway. That's the best way to be, man. Be yourself no matter what, and be happy with what you do and what you have.
The Mix Files, number 11.